In this week, on the 31st of October 1992, Lori Sanchez was in the right place at the right time to poach an 80th minute winner at Old Trafford, of all places, and blow a hole in Manchester United's aspiration to be the first winners of the Premier League. It was no more than the visitors deserved, as Dean Holdsworth saw a first half effort brilliantly blocked by Peter Schmeichel. It left manager Joe Kinnear commenting, "We're changing, evolving, and when we get it right, I think we'll be a quality team." Much like 2025, in fact, we are changing, we are evolving, and when we get it right, we might be a quality team too. In the meantime, we're the same old Wombles, and we're back.
I've been standing here since many years ago. You've been under my skin for as long as I have known. We traveled away and we stand in the rain and the cold. Take the rough with the smooth. If we win or we lose, we just go on.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Same Old Wombles. You might be thinking, hang on, that's a slightly different voice. And you'd be right, slightly different voice. My name is Mark Lewis. Eagle-eyed listeners may remember that I used to be the host of this podcast back in the day, back in season one, I believe, before other things happened and got in the way. Mr. Matt Cooper allegedly will be joining us later this evening, but right now he is otherwise occupied with domestic matters. So I am joined indeed by not my brother, whose name is Tim, but the other bloke, Mr. Niall Cooper. Good evening, Niall. How are you?
I'm glad to be the other bloke. It's a privilege and an honour, Mr. Mark. Though I do love the fact that whenever you say our eagle-eyed listener, because we're on a podcast, right? We have sound only, and eagle-eyed is just the most glorious description in only the way that Mr. Tall Mark Lewis can manage. Because actually,
Have you
everybody
ever
else might
heard the
think
word
it's tall Mark, in fact,
eagle-eared?
not tall. It can, in fact, be very short. But because we call him Tall Mark, that's fine.
Does
Anyway,
eagle-eared
eagle-eyed it
exist as a
is.
word?
Sorry,
I
Mark,
don't
I'll let
know.
you continue.
Thank you, Niall. We're also joined, of course, by the man with all the information, all the technology, who every Monday does absolutely everything he can do to run around like a blue arse what's it to be able to make the recording time. And has done so once again this week because Niall was completely scared as to what might happen if he wasn't here. Doctor, Professor Adam Proctor, good evening. Welcome.
Hello, hello. Yes, I'm glad I'm here. Yeah, it was a bit of a rush. We had I also organised a staff social today, so I had a couple of beers and then I ran for the train to get back. I was slightly more energetic than I normally would be running up the hill.
You see, we call you Professor Dr. Adam Proctor, but really we should call you Professor Dr. Haddock Adam had a couple of beers Proctor, frankly. Can't remember when
Hey.
Adam didn't have a beer, you know.
Thank
He
you.
says drinking a beer of his own. So as I said, hopefully
All
Matt will be
overrated.
joining us later. However, we do have a bona fide guest. I believe this guest might be somebody who is trying to lay claim to being our listener. Unfortunately, I have to let him down because there were other people who put that claim to fame in first. But I'd like to offer a very hearty and loud Same Old Wombles welcome to Mr. Daniel Brett. Good evening, Daniel.
Good evening. It's a pleasure to be here tonight.
Dear, dear, dear. Honestly, you know better. Hopefully, you know better.
I'm glad that I'm not the only listener.
Oh, so are we. Absolutely. Very glad indeed. But I do like the fact that when you came up to me to have a chat at Reading, I believe it was Reading away
Yes.
before the game or half time maybe, and then just on the basis of what I'd said and how I explained it, Adam recognised you straight away. So without any further ado, Mr. Daniel, you tell us because obviously some people will know you around at games. You've got what looks like a. I was going to say it's a wizard t-shirt. It's not
I
a wizard
love
t-shirt. No,
this.
it's an
What I
Eye in the
love that.
Resurrection t-shirt on.
Yes.
What I loved, right, is just we're on Zoom. Daniel is like a little rectangle, and Mark was like peering as though he's going to be able to see the t-shirt by peering down the screen. It doesn't work like that, Mark. It doesn't work like that.
I
He's
should
not in
be.
the same room.
I
You
was almost
can't
worried that he
view
was going to
stuff.
come through my laptop.
With friends like these, hey, who needs the
I know, I thought I got worse. Like,
point of you wearing a an I Am the Resurrection t-shirt is that therefore you've obviously engaged and are part of fundraising efforts and so on. So
yes.
l ignore
No,
all the
I've got another.
catcalling
If
and
we're
the people in the background.
going to go down the indie.
It's all, Niall's internet's failing. It's fine.
Niall's internet's failing because the internet realizes that he just actually shouldn't
This is one
interject.
for wait. Now, can you see that? This is another indie style T-shirt, and if you know what it is, I reckon Mark Lewis might
Yes,
know.
we know what it is.
Very good.
Something jumper, but I didn't see the rest.
Found me
Daniel,
jumper.
please accept our apologies for your interruptions being your introduction even being interrupted.
That's okay.
Good evening, how are you? And how did you get involved in this whole craziness that's known as being a Wimbledon football fan?
So I grew up as a Wimbledon fan. So my first game was in, I think you might correct me, Mark, 1995, when I was about 5 years old. My first game was the Wimbledon Man United game, where Beckham scored from the halfway line. So that's how I.
I wasn't at that game, but it
No,
was
but.
1995. The reason I can tell you that is because I was at the V Festival, and everybody kept coming up to me saying, "What's the Man U score?" And it's like, no idea. I couldn't understand why. And then I realized after about an hour that it was because I was wearing a Wimbledon hat. So, yes, I reckon that was 95. Beckham from the halfway
Yeah.
line, yes.
So
He skinned it. He skinned it.
Me being a very influential kid, unfortunately, went the way of Man United for a number of years, and then
Oh, so
did.
that was actually your first one again just because you were watching Man U,
No,
really?
my dad and my uncle and my granddad Wimbledon fans,
Okay.
but me being a child who was very much a glory hunter back in the days, decided to follow Man United. And then around, I think it was around 2000, I got bored of the whole Man United winning everything, and I started following Wimbledon again, and then basically followed Wimbledon through non-league back into the league.
All the way through. But I mean, to be fair, if therefore you were, a child of the 90s, so to speak, that means you never had the opportunity to go to Playlane first time around. You
No.
only have the opt you only had the option of going to Selhurst. And
Correct.
Selhurst, it was a soulless place. I mean, there are
Yeah.
loads of Wimbledon fans to this day who are devout long-term AFC Wimbledon fans, and in fact long-term Wimbledon fans, but they didn't go and see us play for many, many years. And they couldn't bring themselves to go to Selhurst. And, we have misty-eyed memories of games like Andy Townsend getting himself sent off and beating Villa 4-3 and getting big one sacks and so on. But actually, the number of memories of actually amazing Selhurst games in the long period that we're there is probably 10, 15. We should probably do it one week as to actually work it out. And then, of course, you had King's Meadow as well. So I guess that's a sublime to the ridiculous. But did you do the
Absolutely.
whole Sandhurst and hay bales and Ash United and so on?
I don't think I was going to games like really early on. I can remember us going through Ryman and Isthmian, going to Kingstonian, going to Met Police. So I remember those leagues. I can't really remember much of the CCL days.
But what I mean, it's interesting because Adam now and again produces these photographs, which is evidence that he and his daughter, who's now like 21, 22, was actually at all those games, the first friendlies and everything else. And I'm thinking, I didn't know him then. I didn't know him and I didn't recognize him. But a lot of us, Niall was obviously part of it, engaged with it all as well as I was as well. But a lot of us were so in depth and engaged with it all that we didn't kind of understand how everyone was actually going to feel. I mean, do you remember? I wrote an article that was in the program, and it was about volunteering just for Saturday's game. And in it, I kind of referenced back to the 28th of May 2002. I mean, is that a big day for you? Was that really significant, or did that just pass you by?
I think that just passed me by. I was only 12 when we reformed, so it's
God, I'm feeling old
yeah.
at this point.
Sorry.
Yeah,
For those who don't know, Daniel's got a really quality beard that makes him look like, you know, quite professorial and studious, just like Adam, really. Not like 12 when some immortal thing happened to Ayers of Wimbledon.
I mean, those of you who have seen my Movember pictures from last year, yeah, I looked about 12.
Good, good, good work indeed. So yeah, keep the facial hair. Keep the facial hair. Sorry, you were 12 back in May 2002, so you didn't really focus on that. And
No.
were you going to Selhurst with the parents and the family you mentioned at that point?
Yes, yeah. So I can remember going to Wimbledon Palace games and a few other home games.
But were you one of those people that were like, when we did Back to Plough Lane and turned around with yellow t-shirts, it's like, get out of the way, I just want to watch the football type thing.
Don't think so. I can't really remember much of
Dear, dear, dear,
as
dear, dear, dear,
sorry.
dear. No, don't worry. No reason to apologise whatsoever. It's just one of those, you know, it's not revisionist history. It's just people of a certain age in a certain situation remember these things. It's like when I start singing, I don't know, Park Life or something in the middle of my office, and I've got a bunch of 25-year-olds there who also start singing along, and you think, but you weren't even alive when this song came out. Bizarre, bizarre. Okay.
How often do you sing? How often do you sing Part Life of your office?
All the people, so many people go round and round all the time, my friend, all the time. Come on, you're an indie kid.
Yeah, I'm a massive indie kid. You know that, Mark. But like, you know, I'm just I haven't been in the office for a long time because of COVID and never really went back. So I'm just kind of I'm probably harking back to the reminiscence of the fact that, you know, there is Mark belting out indie tunes. Kind of, I've now got this kind of Damien Albarn impression of Mark Lewis in the middle of this kind of like open plan office, belting out karaoke style. Is that what happens?
Something like that, yeah. My
I don't.
karaoke is absolutely awful, but
Other than Niall continuing to rib all of us, but like, we need his brother in to keep him in check. This is
keep him in
ridiculous.
check. Absolutely right. So
Honestly.
anyway, Daniel was
I
who we're trying
mentioned
to actually hear
that. Should
about.
we mention why Matt's not here? Should we mention why Matt's not here?
Matt is
Yeah.
not here because apparently Matt's gone to IKEA. Now, I
There you go.
guess fast forwarding now to the modern day, Daniel, you're a sensible, respectable man with young children, I gather.
Yeah, I
So
know what
things like
IKEA
IKEA trips are
is.
probably much more common to you than they are to the rest of us, actually.
No.
Wise move. Wise move. I've been to IKEA once in about the last 10 years.
That was a no in the in so fast. That was a no, almost like how much we want to remember Saturday. That's how fast that no was. That was really impressive.
I want to ask another question of Daniel at this point. So, as Mark has alluded to, in 2002, we were pretty embedded in what was happening and were protesting and all that kind of stuff. And clearly, as someone younger than us, that n wasn't necessarily something you were engaging with, right? But you can't, obviously, I'm not saying remember like why you were kind of going, why is everyone turning their back? What's the score? But what, obviously, then you moved to start following AFC Wimbledon. I mean, at what point, because we kind of get to this as we go through in terms of like things you're working and helping and supporting, at what point did you kind of realize there was something different and special about Wimbledon that made you really kind of grab onto the fan ownership model? Because I think we were already there from the get-go
Yeah,
for various
I think
reasons, so.
it was definitely in the later years. I think because I was so young, I don't think I really realised that at that age that AFC Wimbledon was fan-owned. All I knew was I had a football club, but I think it was more when I got into my late teens, early 20s that I finally actually started realising, hey, we're fan don't like we own the cup, not
And
some.
at that point, we were in the middle of Ryman League playoff hell with Wes Daly being an absolute twat, as I described him being on the pod a couple of weeks ago with Mickey Hasbro. So is King's Meadow like your place? Because that's where you first started watching women play. I was very kindly given a like a photo montage of King's Meadow by someone in my family a few years ago, and I think I genuinely gave it away. Which is a bit stupid because I'm sure I could probably donate it to the Weir Wimbledon Fund for the quiz that you're about to talk about later on. But I think I might have given it away because it is fascinating that, and I remember talking to Maddie Sweetman, for example, who's probably, I don't know, 23, 24 or something, and she said exactly the same thing. You know, she as a teenager was first watching Wimbledon, and that in Kings Meadow was where it was at. And even like games like Saturday, which we'll come on to shortly, it wasn't a great game, but there were 8,000 home fans there. I mean, fair play to the 200 and something Burton fans or so that were there, but there were 8,000 home fans to watch Burton Albion against AFC Wimbledon on a not particularly amazingly nice day, and it was an even worse game in League One. And if we'd played that game at Kings Meadow, and I'm sure we probably did play Burton Albion at Kings Meadow, possibly in the first or second League One or League Two. There certainly wouldn't have been anything close to that level there, obviously, because the maximum capacity was what, 4.5 or so. So, taking it back to Kings Meadow, do you have kind of memorable games there? Because we all talk about, you know, on this day back in 1983 when we remember John Leslie as my boyhood hero, but you must have, I don't know, does that make John Main or Danny Kedwell one of those really quintessential heroes for you?
My season ticket went the first lot of years as a season ticket holder. We were in the Ryegas stand, so where the home fans and away fans are, so the terrace. And then the later years of being in League One, we were in John Green stand. But I remember standing in the Ryegas stand, playing Bristol Rovers one Tuesday evening, and I can't remember what the score was. We must have been thumping them, and we were chanting, getting sacked in the morning. And then I can remember a Bristol Rovers fan shouting, "Yo, give him a break. He's doing all right." So it's like, okay. But I just loved being in that stand with the banter with the away fans.
Which
Didn't
in a
really
bigger
get.
stadium doesn't quite work.
No, not at all.
You know, because we tried to do it with the Reading fans, but they were like ages and ages away. And I went to Doncaster and I remember counting there were like seven or eight individual blocks of seats at Doncaster where there was literally no one there at all because it's just a big stand with
One
really no
question.
atmosphere.
The one question I was really keen to ask you, Dan, on a very serious note, was what do you think makes Wimbledon special now to those new generation of fans that weren't? Because obviously, as Adam mentioned earlier on, and as Mark has said, that we're obviously of that generation that we all grew up with it. So it's kind of like it's we're children of the struggle, if you like. You know, that's where we were. We were right at that start. But like now, that new generation, what? How much does the fan ownership make it important? How important is that? And what makes what appeals to that fan base? Why have we got 8,000 home fans now? What's making us feel in that unique?
From I know this is probably a bit of a echo chamber with Nazi Twitter being as it is. But what I can gather from younger fans, younger than myself, isn't fan ownership. I don't think that's the most important thing. It's a great thing for them to have. I think it's more success. With how well we've been doing over the last few years, and community, that we're just community orientated. I think those are the main things that appeal to a younger fan base. I may be wrong, though.
I think I'm just going to say, no, that is really interesting. And I think, obviously, I would tie the community aspect very strongly back to the fact that we aren't owned by others than our fans. I think that is what builds that community. But it's yeah. I mean, when you say community, what are you seeing or what do you think that is? And obviously, this is only from your point of view, is, we're not asking you to represent everyone under 50. Like.
I
Clearly,
think
we are at them.
I think with things that projects that we run like DLAG and the AFC Wimbledon Foundation, I think those kind of things really Yeah.
So when, for example, obviously you would have the scenario in lockdown, I mean, closer to home, and everyone interpreted things and engaged in different ways. This actual podcast came out of lockdown because basically we were watching games together and commenting on them in our wonderful esoteric ways. How did you manage to kind of get the football fix or stay engaged with the club at that point?
By watching or listening to games, me, my dad, and my brother, in my parents' living room, watched our first game at Plough Lane. So, I think it was Doncaster who we played first game.
Yeah,
Yeah,
Pinger
two
scored the first
two.
goal. Yeah.
Yeah,
oh, you beat me to it, Mark.
Man of all knowledge.
Is.
I mean, other than that, I think a lot of it was Twitter, other forms of social media, with the way the club was trying to engage with the fans. Yeah.
And what would be your judgment? Obviously, social media comes in lots of different shapes and forms, and the club comes in for lots of criticism. I actually met the guy who is one of the more recent club employees who's come on board. Actually, used to work for James Woodroffe at Palace, and came on board in the summer. Actually, I don't know whether it was publicised very much at all, but Chris Slaven moved on in the summer, having been in, on the media side of the club for many, many years, and that was all relatively low key, which I thought was a real shame because he was a good stalwart for the club. But anyway, I met the new guy on the tube on the way back from Doncaster. He was just randomly chatting to us. And it turned out he's the new media guy. And I thought, I recognize your voice. And that's because he's the guy that does the interviews after the games nowadays. If I'd realized who it was, I would have said, just be a little bit more energetic and enthusiastic. But never mind. What would your take be? Because obviously our take for, as 50 somethings on how social media is, you know, we're not the audience they're going for. They are going for the teenagers and the 20 somethings and so on. So, what would you say, Daniel, would be your take on things? Daniel's frozen.
While we take them, while we have that break, I'd like to say a big welcome to Mon Frere, Matty Cooper.
Yes. So, apologies, everyone. It's half term. And you have a lot of exciting things that are happening during the half term. And the exciting thing for my daughter, which I foolishly promised, was to take her to IKEA. So that's where I've been whilst the podcast has been motoring along very nicely. I'm excited that Niall's managed to get in the phrase "children of the struggle." I mean, I think that should be on our t-shirts or probably around the badge.
Schoolboy error, schoolboy error. We have temporarily sadly lost Daniel. So at this point, maybe it's a good thing to segue into Saturday's game and see how quickly we can dismiss it from our memory.
Oh, what's that, Mark? I can't. What are you doing? I thought that was covered. That's why I missed this first bit of it, that I didn't have to relive that pain.
Well,
Oh,
no,
that's
we
rubbish.
tried to skate over it by not even mentioning it whatsoever, but actually
Perfect.
we should do,
Do
sadly.
we
Right.
do? Should I do it?
Oh.
I blame Omar Bugle. I'm now going to duck for cover.
Oh, do you know what though, Adam? This was the best moment. So it's at half time, and I've caught up with Tall Mark, and we're having a chat, and he says the only thing about this result is that we can take the piss out of Adam.
Literally, you said that at half time. Wow. Wow. That is
Completely true, completely true, and completely fair, actually, on the basis of everything,
Oh,
you know.
dear me. I haven't
no,
been
I
able to
had
watch
lots
it
of people
back.
talk about it, Adam. And what we want to know is what was worse, right? The actual penalty itself or the follow-up?
Well, there was a rumor going around from someone else on Nazi Twitter, Jampot, actually. Shout out to Jampot if he's listening. That supposedly it was a defender, but it wasn't. It was Bugle from 4 yards who managed to side foot the ball against the post,
Oh,
sadly. But here's
yeah,
some
you can see
stats
that
for
on the
you.
replay. Yeah.
There are here are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 players who played on Saturday, and their penalty stats. Actually, 6 played on
Oh,
Saturday.
yeah. See
Stevens has taken 9 penalties since Bugle last took a penalty and scored 8. Orsi's taken 6 and scored 6. Brown and Seddon haven't taken any. Reeves has taken 3 and scored 3. Hippolyte's taken 7 and scored 5. The last and the only previous penalty that Bougel had taken was in December 2019. What is going on? That's almost 6 years ago.
It's pretty like, okay, let's just like, who like, okay.
Had to rant there. Had to rant.
No, no. Who makes the call on the pitch for the penalty taker?
I really hope no one makes the call on the pitch.
It's really
it's
obvious.
It's got to be done in the dressing room, isn't it?
No, it's really obvious he's made the call. Right, people listen to our podcast because we know that, because there's several examples of that, particularly people senior in the club. They've been listening to Adam go on about Bougel for ages and clearly thought Adam must be, that's the one to listen to. Therefore, Bougel must take the penalty because Adam thinks he's the greatest person since sliced bread. We all know, because me and Matt were talking about this, that the influence we have, this podcast have, is amazing, because obviously it was us that got Bezo and Johnny
and Oggs.
Chris, and Oggs. Also,
and this is great. This is brilliant. So this is fantastic. So my understanding is that if you'd have done the lottery, the numbers that we gave out on the lottery, if you'd have done them on Friday, everyone would have won £6.
£6.
Yeah. So if it if there was
the numbers we chose came up.
Yeah, they came up. So you would have, so we'd have won. Everyone would have won £5.40. So if all our listeners would have done it, we'd have got a tenner. So
next week, Rodney, we will be millionaires. Thank you to the one listener that did actually message us on social to say that he won £4.50, I believe it was. I'm not sure whether he won £4.50 or he was going to give £4.50 to the club because he won £9.
He won £5.40. He won £5.40 on it, and he's donating it to the Skydive.
Good for him.
Which happened.
Which happened last weekend, yeah.
Is it a Hayden by any chance?
Yeah.
Well, he did that skydive. Daniel is back.
Hi.
Daniel was so shocked by me asking the question as to what he thinks of the way that the club communicates that he just frozen and totally died. His internet
I wanted to pick up on you, Mark, is that it's live going. I think we probably should mention a bit about that because obviously, you know, me and Matt were talking about, we mentioned this on Saturday, like where's Slavin, what's gone on? And so I'm really interested about how that, because that's such a bit of news that didn't go through. And obviously Chris Slavin had been involved with the club and a voice of the club, you know, obviously missing his Dorset, South West London tones that he had.
Liverpoolian, yes.
There was a little bit of news about that. And I do think the club did make some noises in terms of like how good he'd been for the club. I picked up on that because I did a few things with Chris at various points and he was great. So I think there was a bit of news about that. Maybe it wasn't that loud, but I do think the club did make some positive noises towards his contribution over time, for sure.
Do we want to actually let Daniel answer the question?
I didn't hear anything about this news.
Well, there you go. I knew about it because I was connected to him on LinkedIn as opposed to anything to do with the football club. But no, the general question was, what do you think of the way that the club communicates stuff? Not, you know, the graphics as to whether Bougel scored or Bougel's missed a penalty, but just generally day-to-day stuff around the club.
Do I have to be careful in what I say?
Of course you don't. We're no way unofficial. This is no way official. So that's why I'm asking you. It's not a loaded question.
Honestly, and the other thing is, remember that, you know, you can say whatever you want because I'm just going to have to edit whatever I say anyway, so it's fine.
Remember that there are two ex-board members on this podcast.
Yeah, but with the emphasis on ex.
I think it could be better. It is good, but...
Not being diplomatic.
It's not great. It's not great to be nice to the guys who do the social media and stuff. There have been times when the club have been slow to release statements when rumours or the news has been filtering out anyway. As I say, it could be a lot better than what it currently is, but don't think I can properly complain about the communication. So,
Daniel was a consummate media professional because while he was saying that sentence, somebody just left the room that he was in, opened the door behind him, shut the door, and went out, and he didn't even bat an eyelid.
No,
absolutely perfect. We were, Matt. Well, actually, Daniel, while you were off, we were about to try and skate over the Burton game as quickly as we possibly could do, but we probably should mention it.
You guys were just going to rib me about the fact that Bugle missed a penalty. That's what actually was happening. There's nothing about the game. They were just having a go at me. I still want to know, when do you actually think they picked the penalty shooter for the game? I don't think it's before
the game.
I don't think so.
Well, but my understanding, and I've never been in many football dressing rooms before games, obviously, because I'm not in any way connected to a professional football club, but I have been in dressing rooms after games where you've got graphics written up on a whiteboard and it says, you know, free kick left, insert name of player, free kick right, insert name of player, corner left, right, and so on and so forth. And it says penalties, number one, player X, Bugle, number two, player Y, Reeves, number three, player, because you need a backup in case your number one penalty taker gets injured in the first 5 minutes and the penalties in the 85th minute, for example.
Okay, so
you need to know
what's
going on straight away.
But even based on that, why, if that was the case, which I don't know if it is, for someone who hasn't taken a penalty, as you said, since 2019, how are they at the top spot?
No idea whatsoever. And the only thing, the only explanation I can have to that is that Reeves is aware right now that he's not anything close to his top performance. Because I did have get a little bit of general kind of inside gossip, so to speak, when somebody who does work for the club did mention to me on the train on the way back from Plymouth.
No shout outs allowed.
We're back on this again. We're back on.
Can't shout out because it's confidential.
Yes. Well, no, the point is that he'd actually had a conversation with Reeves while Omar was being interviewed, having scored the first goal. And Reeves was having a conversation with other club officials. And he was basically admitting how poorly he'd played in the whole game. Yes, he did manage to set up that second goal, which was a winning goal against Plymouth. But the rest of the game, he was poor. And Saturday, I don't think he misplaced as many passes, but he was actually quite comfortably outshone by the floppy-haired guy, Daniel Webster, I believe his name was, for Burton, the number eight for Burton, who actually took some very good set pieces and, to be fair, set up their goal. And actually, if Reeves had been closer to marking him as a player, then he would have had less possession and he wouldn't have set so much up. So I think the moment, unfortunately, Reeves is having a bit of a lull, and maybe that contributes to him not putting himself forward as penalty taker.
I think the other thing that's really noticeable about Saturday's game is the absence of Joe Lewis, because that kind of set piece domination that you have, I think, makes a big difference. That is the sort of ball into the box where you would feel, you know, secure, because Joe Lewis would have been there to sort it out. That's the bit where I think we miss. I think you're right, Reeves off the boil. I think if we looked at Saturday's performance, in my mind, you know, I think Seddon probably had an all right game, and Sasu, when he came on for like 10, 15 minutes, lit up that side of the pitch. Other than that, I think everybody else is a little bit below par, and that's the problem.
Yeah.
You could argue Bishop had one thing to do, and that's pick the ball out of the net.
Yeah, didn't only six.
You still can't rib me, though, because the rest of Bugle's game was awesome. So, unlucky.
Well, here's a question, actually, which does relate to that. We started the season at Luton, and we didn't know whether this was a one-off. Daniel, did you go to Luton?
I didn't, unfortunately. I didn't get the day off work.
Fair enough. But the thing about Luton was we started it off and I thought this is the way we're going to play away from home in a slightly more defensive formation. One man up front, and that was Stevens at the time. And then Hippolyte and Brown, actually it was Hippolyte and Kelly on that night, playing just off them, left and right, respectively. We played that for a few games. It was relatively successful. Then Omar got his place back in the team and we went back to playing two up front with Stevens, and then Stevens got injured again. Now we seem to have reverted to plan A, in that Omar was very much on his own. And when he has big shithouse centre-backs, which most League One teams seem to have, certainly Plymouth had three, and Port Vale had a number, and also on Saturday, Burton had some as well. If we just keep putting the ball in the box, lumping the ball in the box, which we carried on doing even after Boogle had been sent off, taken off, then we haven't got a lot to offer because we've only really got Boogle as a target man. And we know that our strikers, are other strikers apart from Boogle, offer something different. But no one else offers anything like the same kind of aerial threat as Omar does. So actually, I thought, Niall's right. Sasu was great for 25 minutes, but he kept putting the same ball into the near post. And where we sit, sort of to the right of the halfway line near the 18-yard line, you could see exactly what he was going to do each and every single time. And no one ever made the run near post. And then just, it's interesting that actually I felt two peculiar things on Saturday. Number one, we missed Lewis from an attacking perspective, and we also missed Stevens from a defensive perspective. The goal we let in against Burton was exactly the same goal as we let in at Doncaster when Lewis was off the pitch. And in that respect, it wasn't because the Doncaster guy should be marked by Lewis. He should be marked by Stevens. So actually, that's a defensive who's marking who aspect. Stevens actually in the air, think about the goal he scored Ipswich against Ipswich in the Cup last year, is actually really worth his weight in gold. And that's why he worked as a one man up front. The problem we've got, Stevens is going to be out for a considerable amount of time still. And therefore, you've only got Boogle. So if you're twisting and bringing on anyone else, before we even get onto the Aussie debate, you have to have somebody who has some type of ability in the air. They seem to have given up on the idea of Sasu being a central striker. Why? Anyone care to fill me in on that one?
He's quite good.
I mean, I mean, to be honest with you, there was a point where he came on towards the end and was killing it down the line for a good 10 minutes. And then he wasn't delivering because he'd done so well for those few minutes where he came on. In actual fact, when people thought he was going to be like named player of the match. And as soon as Sir John Montedestini would be player of the match, I think he managed to misplace a pass. But he was doing fine. It's obviously what Jackson's doing is he wants to have that cover, doesn't he? He wants to have cover as right and left back. So he's putting Sass in that position. So yes, he has given up on Sass being through the middle. And he was creating chances. I mean, he picked out a decent ball. There should have been someone attacking that near post when a ball came in and their defender got across it and cleared it off for a corner. And towards the end, but I think, again, it was like the last 20 minutes or so, we went for it and we were unlucky. They defended brilliantly. They set up and they knew exactly what they were going to do, which was just to frustrate us as much as possible and hit us on the break, which they did. So it was just one of those days. And I think that's what Reeve said afterwards, didn't he? He just said it was one of those days and JJ was going, it was not one of our... And what's really frustrating is, of course, if we'd have won, we'd have been top of the league. Not just top of the league then, but we'd have been top of the league for 2 weeks because it's the FA Cup. And so we'd have been top of the league. But
no, I couldn't believe it when I looked at it. I was like, oh, my word, we could have been top.
But you know, like, ifs, whats, and maybes. I mean, like, you know, the fact is we all believed, I think, that at this time of the season, we'd be looking at being fifth or sixth from bottom. And that's what we're doing. And now we're getting selfish because, you know, we've won six and a half games.
No, this is so like on it. Like, seriously, I don't know. I'm not on the Facebook or whatever. If anyone's complaining on those spaces, like, for goodness sake, we are absolutely smashing it in terms of what was expected, in terms of our budget, etc. We were supposedly going to be relegated instantly, right? And at this point in time, unless we absolutely tank it, we are doing fantastic. And that is one, I'm pretty confident that isn't going to happen. I don't even think the January window can screw us that hard.
Adam, what was it? A December 22?
Oh, no,
Mark,
don't
when
give
we
me...
started on the losing drawing streak.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't say anything, Adam.
It is exactly that. We were flying, weren't we, in that particular season? And then we give and you mean like, but you just got to look at other sides, not just that. Look at Walsall, who you got.
Daniel, I'm yeah. still I'm still on that particular incident, right? That is definite PTSD Don's Trust Board moment for me.
Yes, right? Sorry.
It really is. Because there are lots of things that we said, if you sell Palmer, there are things you must have in place.
Oh,
and they were not in place. And then we went, vroom.
No, and also, I'm it's fair enough to bring in the kind of history, but we are a team at this point in time, and I think that's the difference. And we were pipped prior to this league, and not that, you know, prior to being promoted, not like then, as not being able to perform at all. And we are totally performing out of our comfort zone, etc. So I'm,
Me and Matt once ran into Craig Cope, and he was talking about who we could sell, and it was exactly that point. It was that there are no real star players that are going to get us a load of money in our starting 11. You know, they're not those kind of obvious young, talented who we can flog for whatever we have done, because we have a team. So we, you know, that's a great credit to us because it's why we are where we are. The detriment of that, obviously, you live in a financial ecosystem where you actually do need to have those young, talented players that come through that you can sell, because that's basically what's been our saving grace has been, you know, the sales and the
Redownies amongst other people,
the players that we've had that have come through. We can list a lot of them.
That's also the people that have come at us, that we've got a chunk of debt we need to pay off, and we need to have a big player to sell, and we currently don't.
but talking about teams that come at us, that in itself, a nice segue, is actually the issue, because Burton didn't come at us. They had a game plan. They could see what was going on. They could see how to frustrate us. They frustrated the crowd. They got the crowd quiet. And we didn't have an answer, particularly. The thing is, the most frustrating thing for me, or two different things. Number one, the referee just didn't know the laws. And I think Adam would have been ranting and raving here. Hopefully those that were at the game will remember. Burton were defending with their lives to the point where two of them went for the same ball and succeeded in colliding with each other, and were not out cold, but certainly down. And because they were down, they are therefore, by the laws of the game, should have gone off for a minimum 30 seconds. And we all know that when that happens, it's always at least 45 seconds or more. Same thing happened when Lewis had the issue with his finger at Doncaster, and that's the time when they scored because we were missing a defender at a set piece. It was a corner to us. Two of them going down and getting treatment in itself succeeded in the momentum being lost. And then the referee just played on. What the fuck, frankly? There's no other way of describing that. It's just completely wrong. Completely fundamentally wrong. And I've yet to see anyone to be able to try and explain to me. If it's like, oh, well, the game would just carry on anyway. It's like, well, fine. Then throw away the law that you've already got. I wasn't seeing anyone near the assessor that game.
The reality is, right, is I think the referee just bottled it because it was a corner and the two centre-backs would have had to have gone off the pitch for 30 seconds. You're defending a corner with eight outfield players and when we were all piling forward, that's exactly bottled it, completely nutting up. Absolutely, I agree with you, Mark.
Then he should have the puck thrown at him and be sent back to non-league or even lower than non-league to actually remember how to referee.
Exactly.
But can,
Adam wasn't even there, so I had my inner what the heck going on.
Can I ask a question on this? Because I'm trying to make myself feel calmer about the situation by believing that it was a very soft penalty.
It wasn't. There are soft penalties, and then there's what happened on Saturday. So basically, we were far too far away to be able to see this. I'm not going to accuse Marcus Brown of being a diving anything. But the reality is, and this was played back at halftime, and you can see any clips and you can see the YouTube stuff and whatever else, because they obviously are able to hone in on it rather quickly. He gets past the defender. He's very close to the referee, so the referee can see exactly what Marcus Brown's line is. He gets past the defender. He sees the defender lunging across, and he moves towards the area or further into the area and vaguely towards the ball. He's not in any likelihood of striking the ball. The defender tries to wrap his leg around him, doesn't touch him. And the referee, who's 5 yards away, vigorously shakes his head because it wasn't a foul. He was already falling before the defender even made the challenge. The defender didn't even actually touch him in the first place. If I was a defender, I would have screamed blue murder. That's why the referee vigorously shook his head. And apparently the penalty was only given when, hence the delay in things happening, when the linesman flagged and showed that from his angle, which is even less understandable, comprehensible to me, Brown supposedly had been fouled, but he wasn't touched, so it wasn't a penalty. And yes, you want to benefit for those things, but it wasn't a penalty, so that doesn't make it any better that we missed it, because I think if we'd scored, we would win the game. Burton's game plan is totally out the window. But you've got to take every advantage that's going, because yes, we've got 25 points, but we need another 25 points PDQ.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to calm myself down, believing that, you know, it shouldn't have been a penalty. I mean, it should have been. I mean, a draw would have been a fair result, I think, on reflection.
Oh yeah.
But it's just one of those days where nothing fell for us, and we could have done with a Matty Stevens.
Yeah, but the good thing about the Matty Stevens thing is his dad actually responded to an injury. His dad responded to a social media post because somebody posted that they'd been in the gym with him, to which I said, how long is he until he's back? To which his dad said, another scan in a couple of weeks, just to see where we are in the healing process. But fingers crossed, early to mid-December. So
that's good.
That's good news. As good news as you can get, really. But we have to find an idea of who we're going to play before that, in that particular situation. I'd like to play Hackford from the start. We know he's not the finished article. We know he's got pace, but we know he hasn't necessarily got finesse or particular actual real body strength. I'd just like to play him as a two with Boogle, let Boogle try and bully Gateshead, play as strong a team as we can get away with, whilst resting a few people that desperately need a rest. I think Smith desperately needs a rest, for example. And take it from there. But that then hopefully that will get us through the Gateshead game without any particular issues, and into the second round of the Cup.
Okay, can I ask this question? And actually, and Daniel, you can jump in here as well, because we have, as you know, you'll have heard, you know, we're children of the struggle, and you know that's, and we have PTSD from, you know, what's happened to the club in the past. So we find Daniel Orsi a very weird addition to
I knew where this was going. Yeah.
A very weird addition to the squad. And also, I think it's very, because I found myself doing it, sorry, but I think he's an incredibly easy target if something's going wrong. So, right. You know, there was a ball into the box at one point, and he looked like he ducked out of the way of it, probably because he thought there was someone in a better position behind it. If the ball was going to come to him, it'd be difficult for him to do anything with it anyhow. But I just feel that it's very, very difficult for him unless he, you know, he starts banging in a hat-trick. And obviously scoring those couple of goals at Blackpool helps, but I don't know. So I'm interested to know what you think.
Yeah, he is a very, I would say, polarising for some of the fan base because of where he's been on loan. But yeah, I think that's the only reason that people are treating him any differently to, let's say.
Is it though? Because here's a question. Sorry to jump in, Daniel.
That's right.
If you had a choice of four players in a game like Saturday that you could bring on from the bench, and you've got Hackford, you've got Orsi, you've got
Sasu,
and you've got Maycock, for example. And those four players were all on the bench on Saturday. So you could bring in any of those four players or a combination of all four or whatever, and it's a separate conversation to have about Maycock as well. But when those players come on or don't come on or could come on, which of those players do you actually have the confidence in is going to get you a goal?
Hackford. And that's probably about it. But I...
The defence rests.
No, I agree with you. I think I would say that the Aussie is a similar player to Josh Lewis, to
Josh Kelly, possibly.
Possibly to Ollie Palmer, where they're more of a workhorse than a goal scorer.
I would not compare Palmer.
All right, maybe
to also by many, 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 many times. Palmer was also very good defensively, and
a bit like Bugle.
True.
Yeah, okay, Aussie's like a really bad, horrible, badly performing Bugle who probably has got slightly tarnished because of his previous reputation, and he'll have to do an awful, awful lot to appease me. And, you know...
Sorry, Daniel. As you can see, we're very welcome to everybody's ability to express their opinion, as long as we are able to completely and utterly guess your opinion straight away.
Yeah. You were never going to get... It didn't matter who you compared him to. Niall was just going to be like, no, definitely not. It could have been the worst player we've ever had. And I'll be like, no, he's not as good as that player. So don't care not. Your opinion is valid. Niall was just going to, like, kick it wherever it is.
The one thing I'd...
Or John Gale.
Oh, my word. Yeah, to be fair to Daniel, he would never seen John Gale play, so...
Yeah.
Right, I'm trying to think of other really, like...
Dave's went first.
Well, you think about it. I'm going to think about which.
I just think for me, what I think is difficult then is it's. I think it's really unfair on the player as well. I think it's unfair on Aussie because he's gonna be the scapegoat if things are going wrong.
I was gonna say, Daniel, correct. In terms of like, because as we've alluded to. Our concern over franchise is pretty. I don't know what you want to call it.
Well, same with me.
But it's kind of. So I kind of. How is that built different? Because we've got a very specific position for that. But obviously, you come in slightly later. This. How is that? What is the difference between your dislike of franchise and that colouring this player having to be on loan with them versus potentially ours? Because we might see it completely weirdly. I don't know.
I mean, I didn't like it at first. But with a lot of our players, I like to give them a chance first before I actually start forming opinions of the player. Even if my starting position is really, really high, Piggott version 2. I like to make my own decisions before I actually...
Oh, which is the best way, Dan. That's as it should be. That's as it should be. And that's how I would genuinely like to be as a person. But football does something very odd to me. And I think it is horrible, but like I said, it seems very unfair on Aussie because he's come in and he has to be amazing. Genuinely, he has to be amazing to win us over. I think the other thing that hasn't helped his cause is he's not said anything anti-franchise at all.
No.
And so that hasn't helped him.
The club hasn't said anything either in regards to that properly.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had a brief statement when he came, but they didn't do like a proper interview with him, like going, why Wimbledon?
Yeah. I think that is a misstep, isn't it? I think we would say now that's a misstep by the club. They should have thought about the fact that if he doesn't come out scoring goals, the fans will look for a scapegoat, will kind of have concerns about that. So I think from a media and comms point of view, the club should have said as part of the onboarding process of you starting, we're going to want to do something. And one thing we're going to want to do actually is for you to stand quite strongly against this other club that you happen to have been on loan with. And that didn't happen. And it's not going to happen now. It's too late, right? There's no point doing it now. So I think that was a misstep. I think whoever briefed him, whoever's doing press at that point, should have thought, actually, because they, the club do all this onboarding about what it means to be a Wimbledon player, etc. And I think they, sh- someone, and I don't know who, didn't connect those dots and say, actually, we need to make it really clear that Orsi is now a Wimbledon player, and that he, you know, and not make up a story, but just have something said about, you know, it could have been just factual about being loaned to franchise or whatever. I don't know.
Adam, that's a really interesting point. So, Mark, when you're on that train with the new media person, and you said they came across from James with James Woodruff, does that mean that that person doesn't really get Wimbledon, doesn't really understand it? Because for me, all you've got to do is walk around the concourse at Plough Lane or into the museum at Plough Lane. There's a massive section on the children of the struggle mat. You know, there's a huge pictures of the black balloons, right? There's all that stuff around. There is that huge cartoon. It's like all of that. There are numerous mentions of that issue that you've got. You know, we are very unique. We exist because as a consequence of a very, very nasty, horrible divorce, effectively, right? And Mark, I'm just intrigued. That media person clearly didn't get like the brief, because that was a very, very simple move to make that would have appeased us, because like it's part of our identity. Sadly, and much as I hate it, we exist because they exist.
All of us agree on that one, but I think as Daniel said sensibly identified already, you know, if you come into this story at a different time because of your background, because of your age or whatever else, you're not going to have the same ingrained stuff in your DNA as you know, the four of us that obviously are of a similar age.
I mean, I must admit though, my brother, who is 4 years younger, has, when Orsi joined, said, even if he scores, I will not be chanting his name.
And to be honest, my wife, who's been through the whole thing and struggled with us as well, but is much less opinionated about football stuff and doesn't engage day to day and doesn't do social media whatsoever. We're walking out of the game on Saturday, and in that kind of disgruntled, your team's just lost 1-0 type way, she just says, we've got to sell Orsi. We've got to sell Orsi. He's completely useless. And just, she doesn't swear at all. She didn't swear, but she might as well have done. I said, you can't sell someone who's a striker who doesn't score goals, because no fucker will buy him.
But the thing is, it's not rocket science, right? You ask any football fan who has concerns about, who's a football fan, and you ask them about franchise and they're actually a football fan, they will have a non-positive word to say about the setup of that club, because it doesn't sit with football fans. And so it's pretty obvious for anyone, whatever reason you are stressed about the existence of franchise, and I think we have slightly different reasons to be agitated by that. And obviously, as we've discussed before, they're not a rival, but some people might see them as a rival. So there's a bunch of different points of kind of contention. It's not rocket science to say the vast majority of fans of football do not have a good thing to say about that club. And so for someone to come to the club that was born out of that insanity, the media people should have got that and said, actually, we need you to come and say something. We need to figure out some approach. And that's not like flipping it, because that's not difficult. And so I don't know what happened there. It's a total misstep, bad idea. Orsi's not performing. And I continue to happily give him the benefit of the doubt. But he, you're not going to get fans behind you if you, at this point. And that's not going to make you play better. That's not going to play into all kinds of stuff. So, unfortunately, he's basically putting himself on the bench now.
I'm going to make a brilliant segue, right? Because there's a reason why Daniel's on. And it is the We Are Wimbledon Fund to help raise new players' money to buy new players in the January transfer window. Well, I think this is a fantastically brilliant segue about why we should do that. So, perhaps Daniel and Adam could talk about the We Are Wimbledon Fund, and hopefully we can raise some more money to buy players in the January transfer window. That would be brilliant, wouldn't it?
Is there any truth in the rumour that you're rebranding yourselves as the Replace Daniel Orsi Fund?
No.
Sorry, that was harsh. That's
so bad. On, chaps. I'm not saying anything. Daniel is doing all the saying. I've stepped away.
Am I?
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, I thought you'd been doing well over the last few months with plugging We Are Wimbledon.
I don't think I've been doing well enough. Most of the other people involved with this have been doing way better than me and way more useful than me. So,
so yeah, so Dan, Yeah, so Daniel, do you know what though,
Yes.
for our listener, and I'm aware of time, by the way, if you're able to just give us an idea about why we're this particular thing, that what it's about, what we're looking to do, and what's coming up, would be brilliant.
Yep,
And try
so
not to mention selling Daniel Orsi, right? Just for
yeah.
the basic of, like, whatever.
Okay, I'll try not to.
Yeah.
Replacing, not selling.
So this coming Sunday, we are hosting a quiz at the Alexandra Pub in Wimbledon by Wimbledon Station. Time is 7 p.m. The quiz will be starting. We are almost at max with the amount of tickets that have been sold. So if you haven't already, then please do purchase a ticket and join the team. We would love to have you there. We are also selling raffle tickets at, I think it's £10 a strip. Adam, is that right?
Sure, that's correct.
Yeah. Okay, let's go with that. I'm sure my other team members will correct me if I am absolutely
Is
incorrect.
£10 a strip.
Thank you, Mark. One thing that I would like to mention, a big thank you to the givers of prizes. So to AFC Wimbledon for donating a signed shirt and a signed ball for the quiz. We've got Wimbledon Tennis donating a few things. We've got Goals donating a few things. We've even got our brilliant Wimbledon fans donating things like signed shirts, signed pictures, etc. Yeah. And
Two tickets for an evening with Bezos, apparently, I've just noticed.
two, yes, we've also got that. A wonderful fan has donated that as well. Raffle tickets will be sold on the night as well. So if you do come and you haven't bought a raffle ticket, a strip, then feel free. If you can't make it and still want a raffle ticket, then donate. Go on to the We Are Wimbledon Fund website and donate £10, and make sure you put in the comment that it's raffle tickets, and then your name will be entered into the raffle.
So these are the
Yes.
key things and key reasons why Niall Cooper will have to spend lots of money on raffle tickets, because
Yes,
there's a
sorry, Niall.
frame part of the prizes include, I'm reading now from the website,
Yes.
a framed playoff final print of Lyle Taylor Baby, signed by Lyle Taylor Baby, thanks to Ray Armfield for the donation. And Ray Armfield also donated a framed yellow and blue program signed by Neil Sullivan, no, Andy Sullivan himself. More prizes are available on the We're Women Fund website.
Is it a first edition, Mark?
Pass. I doubt it, because
No
you and I
idea.
have got all the first editions in our own cupboard.
I've got
Yeah,
quite
don't
a
make
few,
us
it's
go into
true.
the loft, for goodness sake, Noel.
Awesome. And obviously the money that is raised goes towards the fund. And I'm assuming that after this, there'll be some other things in the run up to, in December or whatever it is. You've got some other things planned.
To be confirmed. We haven't got that far yet with planning. So we are looking at what we can organise going forward. Another shout out that I forgot to mention, I do apologise. A massive, massive, massive thank you to Mick Dore for hosting us at the Alexandra Pub. A lot of this couldn't have been possible without him. Without his generosity, with hosting.
If no one's ever been to the Alex, he actually does a pub quiz on a Monday night normally, which I go to once a month with some friends. It's completely free to get into, and there's about 20 odd teams to go there. There are a lot of Wimbledon fans that are involved there as participants, naturally, because it's in Wimbledon. And the best bit about it, and I don't know whether or not there's going to be a similar round to this on Sunday, but the best bit about the normal quiz he does is the last round where he croons in the style of Engelbert Humperdinck, for those of you of a certain vintage. He croons like a 1990s pop song, like by George Michael or whatever. He croons a couple of lines from that, and you have to guess what the actual song is. But as those of you know Mick, he is a fairly straight-talking Yorkshireman from Harrogate, and therefore he's not necessarily able to sing anything like the type of key or the type of appropriate way in which a George Michael or a Lionel Richie or whatever song should be sung. So I look forward to seeing his version of the Champagne Song, for example.
There is a live music round, and I don't know what what's been announced about that. But let's just say there's a live music round that I think a lot of Wimbledon fans will appreciate a lot.
Especially as it's being done by the bloke who actually performed live in Box Park. That's correct. Been announced.
Yes. Oh, has it? Okay.
Yeah, it's on the website. I'm just waiting for the website. All right. So.
Yeah, we've got to be careful because we don't know what's been announced necessarily. Or I can't remember. So, yeah. So, yeah, Sammy Mack is going to be doing a live music round, which would be awesome. So,
sounds fantastic.
I love that, Adam. That little tease. We don't know what's been announced yet, which means to say there's lots of things that haven't been announced yet. How very, very exciting. I would say to all our listener, do stay tuned to the Same Old Womble social media feeds, because Adam will clearly be helping, making sure they are retweeted out and that everything that is still to be announced, which is obviously got to be big, because big surprise, that's what Adam will be doing. Adam, I'm very much looking forward to it. What a tease.
I'm ready there for the retweet button, or whatever it's called, the re-X, I don't know what it's called.
And dear listener, listen out for the We Are Wimbledon Fund website and social media channels as well for any updates.
Fantastic. Thank you, Daniel. I look forward to seeing you down there. There will be a Same Old Wombles team. So even if you don't think you're any good at quizzes, you can come down and beat us and just take the piss out of us. And we're quite happy to just play along with that. There'll also be an old ex-players team, as Mickey Haswell mentioned the other day, as Mickey Haswell, John Main, and either Terry Brown or Dave Ransom. We're not sure which, actually. Oh, and Ben Judge. So I hope that Mick Gore's got a lot of beer in, because Ben Judge does like a pint or two, so I'm told.
Absolutely fantastic.
Talking of fantastic, FA Cup this weekend. Are we decidedly ecstatic about that, or are we just thinking it's a major banana skin like Dagenham Road a couple of years ago?
We can have a row with Adam Proctor about this one, because I certainly did last week. It's the FA Cup, right? It's why we have triangular flags. We have triangular flags because we won the FA Cup. It is a special moment. It is unique. It's not like you walk down, I'll go through the main, up those stairs, and I'll go and have a look. If you're going into the West Stand, I'll have a look on the side of the walls, and I go, I'll just get rid of that one because it's the FA Cup. Doesn't mean anything, does it? Is that right? Or I'll go through the reception and ignore that little pot trophy. It doesn't mean anything. I think that means an awful lot. It is the FA Cup. It means something. It's important. And I am not on this stupid like idea of it being detrimental. Bring back ITV, BBC, starting at 8 o'clock, cameras on the bus, like a special kind of, what they used to have, that kind of
breakfast
crazy
with Jones.
Inflatable stuff.
Yeah.
All of that. Bring it back. All that whole malarkey, whole day, special world, special FA Cup thing, last game of the season. And if you're like, and then we can all go and, you know, whatever, humiliate those big teams like we used to do. Adam, the FA Cup is special. I will be there, and I hope lots of other people are there as well.
1983.
It is our history. It is our heritage, Adam Proctor. And I'll be totally picking on him, because last week he was like, we need to rest our squad and make sure, because it isn't that important. It is important, Adam. It is the number one. It's the oldest cup competition.
He did say that.
Well,
Daniel, go a word in advance.
So, as I probably shouldn't be saying this, as someone who listens to all four fans' podcasts, it's funny hearing every single one of you guys arguing about whether FA Cup means something this year or not. I personally think it does, just because it builds confidence in the team and it generates money.
It's pretty simple.
I love you, Daniel. You're very great. I have to also say, I do love Adam as well. Adam is a very important, great person. We just disagree on this point. That's all.
We don't disagree. You've missold me again. Yeah, I think the FA Cup is really important. I would love to have the whole day Saturday TV thing. They mess around with that. It's nonsense. What I was trying to suggest is that it is, at this point in the season, it is not as important as the league. However, having seen what's happened over the last week, I think it's an awesome opportunity to switch up who plays, who's on the pitch first, who's the first 11, all that kind of cool stuff. So I won't be there. I'm not that excited about getting, you know, our legs killed by Gateshead. But do I think the FA Cup is important? Of course I do. It's so unfair to, like, Niall is totally unfair to me. But I think we should pick a different starting 11. I think we should use it as a game to try something out. Does that mean we might lose the game potentially? Does that mean the FA Cup is less important? No, it doesn't.
Yeah, you're contradicting yourself. You're contradicting yourself.
So are we thinking
you've either, like, got to go for it to win it by putting out your best team, or you're suggesting putting out a lesser team and that we might lose? Well, surely we've got
mean
to go,
I don't think it's
go
important.
To win.
I'm just saying
go
that...
to win. Go to win. Go to win.
Oh, give us
so Adam, what would you rather? 5-0 against Ramsgate? Or what was it last year, 2-1 against Dagenham?
Oh, yeah. Awful.
The 5-0 game was quite funny, actually, yeah. That was one of the last hurrahs of Ali, I seem to believe, before we sold him. So.
Yeah.
And actually, I was selling programmes that night to the Ramsgate fans, and they were really up for it, and they were really excited about it.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
Dear. Mr. Niall Cooper has to head off.
Yeah.
And we are running way over time.
Yeah.
So I would
really?
Like to see, just for a change, I'd like to see the likes of McCoy Splatt and potentially Harbottle and potentially even your man who's on the October calendar thing here, whose name I've temporarily forgotten.
See, Mark has literally just said what I was suggesting.
Maycock. No, I'd like to see the three of them, give them a chance. But otherwise, I would have the other eight players being the main first choice.
I play and King as well.
Yeah, except for the fact that he's on loan at Chatham. Chatham are in the first round of the FA Cup.
Is he still on loan there?
Yeah, he's gone back there on loan. And Craig Jennings is at Sutton United, keeping some bloke called Alex Woodyard out of the team, which is good. But I'm glad he's got a decent quality loan as well, because I think someone like Jennings could be useful, could have a useful opportunity to actually make an impact on our season after Christmas, but only if he's actually played 2 or 3 months of consistent, solid, decent standard conference football. Because remember, conference football is 2 levels below where we are now. So, okay. Any other business for anyone else? Mr. Matthew Cooper, late coming to the pod.
Mike, I'm done. I'm just pleased to have joined it at some point. Upset that he hadn't covered the match before the time I joined.
So sad.
Yeah.
And Mr. Niall Cooper's already buggered off to make some lasagna. Dr. Professor Adam Proctor, any final words from you?
No, I like the way we're ending now. It's quite nice.
I'm just being polite to everyone and actually giving someone the last words. Daniel's yawning, so it's definitely
I'm just going to annoy Matt because I know he tries to end the podcast about 5 times.
I know. But now this is fun. It's fun for me to be here on this side of it, joining late. So Mark has to try and end the podcast. We'll see how that goes.
Can I be annoying and bring it back to the two players colliding thing?
Please do. Please.
Right, so I've had a look at the FA rules.
Oh, go on then.
So there are exceptions to the rule.
Oh,
so
come on!
Injury to a goalkeeper.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
When a goalkeeper and outfield player have collided and both need immediate attention.
Yeah, neither of these two apply so far.
When players from the same team have collided and need immediate attention. Saturday was a bit iffy with the immediate attention needed. And then when a severe injury has occurred, i.e.
Well, that didn't occur either. This referee clearly was not at Hampton in about 2008 or whenever it was. When two Hampton players collided with each other, the referee waved play on. Chris Hussey put the ball in the box and John Mayne hit it in. And everyone went bananas. But yeah, thank you very much for bringing the mood down by actually pointing out common sense. Common sense on this podcast. How many episodes have you ever listened to?
Oh, yeah, come sorry.
This is season episode 13. We haven't had more than 20 seconds of common sense in that whole time. This is how to guarantee you won't get invited back. Honestly.
We tried it once. I'm not keen on it, to be honest with you.
All right.
Certainly not. Daniel Brett, thank you very much.
That's okay. I won't come back closer to the transfer window then.
No, please do. Please do. Because at that point, we will be plummeting down the league on a five-game losing run. And therefore, we will obviously need a new striker and a new central midfield player.
And all the cash.
And all the cash we can possibly get.
Yep.
Thank you very much, Matt, for joining us belatedly. Thank you, Daniel.
Always a pleasure.
Please come back soon.
I will.
Thank you. Thank you, Adam. We've been the same on Wombles. And we'll see you very soon. Thank you and good night.
Standing here since many years ago, you've been under my skin for as long as I have known.